You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
I'd never heard of this faggot before this weekend. Okay, wait. Before I go on, a point of order. I don't use fag as an insult. I call people I like fags. A lot of my friends are fags. My fag friends like to call me a fag. And there's nothing I like more than when the fag whose dick I'm sucking calls me a fag. I call people I like fags. I also call people I don't like fags. So me calling someone a fag isn't by itself an insult. It doesn't tell you whether or not I like someone. This fag? I do not like this fag. George Santos is a gay Republican. This Santos guy, this Santos fag, is a Trump Republican because all Republicans are Trump Republicans now. And Santos and his pharmacist fiance partied with Don Jr. and Ivanka and Rudy and Vanilla Ice at Mar-a-Lago on New Year's Eve. And then Santos posted photos of himself and his pharmacist fiance partying at Mar-a-Lago to his wide open Instagram and Twitter accounts. Santos isn't well known. I didn't know he was before this weekend, but he's not a private citizen. This fag's a politician. He ran for a House seat in 2020 in New York's 3rd Congressional District, a race he lost by 13 points. And he's already announced that he's running again for the same seat in 2022, and he's started raising money. He's not going to win, but grifters got a grift. So it makes sense that the New York Times would note Santos's presence at the Mar-a-Lago Super Spreader New Year's Eve bash. I mean, this fag wants to represent New York in Congress. The New York Times covers congressional races in New York and elsewhere. And it might, I don't know, interest New Yorkers who read the Times to know that this gay who wants to represent them in Congress was out there violating safety protocols and putting himself at risk and everyone he comes into contact with at risk, putting his constituents at risk, all to suck up to that loser, Donald Trump. And now Santos, this faggot, is having a meltdown. He's claiming he had to grab his fiance and his four dogs and flee their home and go into hiding after the New York Times made the photos that he posted publicly a little more public. Santos posted those photos to his campaign Twitter account, by the way, at Santos for Congress. So he obviously wanted the people who follow him and support him to know he was partying at Corona Largo with Don Jr. He just didn't want everyone to know. Santos is following the Republican playbook here to a T. He's falling down, he's clutching his pearls, he's playing the victim. He also says his fiance, who happens to be a pharmacist again, got fired from his job, which, if true, I'm having a really hard time feeling bad about. A lot of people who go to pharmacies, a lot of people who interact with pharmacists, have compromised immune systems. That's why they're at the pharmacy picking up meds. And a pharmacist who doesn't take COVID precautions seriously is not just a danger to himself, he's a danger to the people who show up at his pharmacy, the place where he works. Of course he should be fired. Santos, like all Republicans, is claiming he's being persecuted. What he's being is held accountable for his actions. You would think a member of the Party of Personal Responsibility, as the Republicans like to call themselves, could get behind that. Over on Instagram, Gays Over COVID was holding gay circuit queens accountable by posting or by reposting photos and videos originally posted by gay men partying in Puerto Vallarta over New Year's Eve. A party boat full of these gays, some of whom are doctors and nurses, people who, like pharmacists, really should know better, wound up capsizing and sinking. No one died when the party boat sank, thank God, so we can all safely laugh about the karma of it all. But some of those fags are going to die or kill someone because they got infected down there this weekend. And for the record, way more straight people have been behaving badly and behaved badly over New Year's Eve. Most of the people at that Mar-a-Lago party were straight. 75 infections have been traced back to a single packed Christmas church service in North Carolina. Some people love Jesus so much, they seem to want to celebrate his birthday with him in person next year. I think the light we can all suddenly see at the end of the tunnel is causing some of us to lose our resolve, if not our minds. I get it. We are all exhausted. Some of us are exhausting. But the end of the tunnel, That's a world where enough of us have been vaccinated for all of us to be safe. That's still a long way off. The risk of contracting COVID may be greater now than it has ever been at any other point during the pandemic because so many people are infected. Which means if you drop your guard now, if you're stupid enough to party in Mexico or Mar-a-Lago or worship in a packed church right now, or unlucky enough to come into contact with someone who did, you could wind up being the last person to die in this pandemic, or the last person to kill in this pandemic. Don't be that person. Don't be a Santos. Okay, coming up on today's show, on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the Magnum, which you can subscribe to at www.savagelovecast.com. The Magnum Savage Lovecast, no ads, more guests, more calls, twice as much show. Joe Ellen Naughty joins us on the Magnum, comes back to the Magnum to talk with us about Instagram's new terms of service and what they mean for sex educators and sex workers and sex havers, what they mean for all of us. All that's coming up on today's show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Calm, the number one app for meditation and sleep. For a limited time, my listeners get 40% off a Calm premium subscription by going to calm.com/savage.
This episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by the good folks at Squarespace. They make it easy to build a beautiful website, blog, or online store. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
This episode is brought to you by Helix Sleep, the best mattress for your individualized comfort. Right now, my listeners get up to $200 off all mattress orders at helixsleep.com/savage.
Hey, Dan and tech-savvy at-risk youth. This is a quarantine success story. It's a 30-something het male. I enjoy trying anal play with my partner, and I was alone in my house, and I thought, you know what? I would probably become a better partner and person who is better able to understand and respond to the needs of my partner during anal, because that can be a particularly difficult and sensitive time. So I went ahead and threw in a vibrating butt plug in my own ass, and I gotta say, I hated it. I did not enjoy the sensation. I did come. I used a lot of lube and all that stuff. Did all the smart things, but just found it kind of distracting and unenjoyable. But the upshot to it was that it did make me better at giving anal pleasure to my partner and, understanding kind of what the different vibrations would do and how they would respond and, just what was more enjoyable. And I'm actually laying with her right now. And I think that we would say that it went pretty well, right?
Went pretty well.
There you go.
If I may paraphrase Gandhi, something Gandhi never said, be the butt play you want to see in your relationship. Congratulations. You didn't like that vibrating butt plug too much. Maybe you should have gone with a non-vibrating butt plug the first time you experimented with anal penetration yourself. But good on you, sir, for not asking your female partner to do something that you yourself weren't also willing to do. And it sounds, at least from her voice, like somebody had fun. Thank you for calling in and sharing your sex success story. Every week, before we get to the problems and the conflicts and the issues and the trauma, we like to share something upbeat, something positive, something that worked before we get to the stuff that isn't working. If you want us to open next week's Lovecast with your sex success story, give us a call and share.
Hi, Dan. I'm in my late 30s. I'm married. And my question is that I think that I masturbate in a way that nobody else does. It's always been kind of a weird, shameful thing for me, because the only way that I really know how to masturbate is something that I've been doing since I was in kindergarten. Basically, I put one wrist over the other and kind of lay on top of it. And I don't want to say grind against them, because there's really very little movement. It's more of just a pressure thing. And I've never shown it to anybody. I'm married. My husband's never seen it. He's asked many times, but I think it's really weird and not sexy at all. And I also think that it has kind of ruined me for a lot of quote unquote normal sexual pleasure. Before getting married, I definitely had a long and varied sexual history, and the things that work for other people just don't seem to work for me. Vibrators, oral sex, if anything, those things can actually be kind of uncomfortable for me. And I guess my question is just, do other people do this? Am I just a total freak, or is it common? Like I said, I'm in my late 30s, and I feel and have always felt like I'm just kind of the only one, and it's like this weird secret that I have that's kind of ruined my ability to orgasm normally.
If you can incorporate it into partnered sex, whatever it is, it hasn't ruined partnered sex for you. If you can enjoy partnered sex without coming, if this is something you need to come, this thing that you need can and could incorporate into partnered sex, if you can enjoy partnered sex without coming, it hasn't ruined partnered sex for you. You carry around this secret, and you've attached a lot of shame to it, and I think you need to separate those two things. There's a way in which you are able to achieve orgasm. There's a way in which you've been pleasuring yourself since kindergarten that you know works, and you feel bad about it, and so you don't tell your partners about it, and then that becomes something you're withholding. It becomes this shameful secret, and it's not something that you should be ashamed of. It would have been great if sex education had started for you age appropriate in childhood, and you had been encouraged, or you had been informed, that masturbating in just one way, just one style, over and over and over again for years and years and years can create a kind of sensational dependency. It can carve a really deep groove into the neurons and those pleasure centers that aren't just about, you know, physical sensations, but also about ritual and emotional sensations and attachments and expectations. This works for you because it's always worked for you. You trust that it'll work for you because it has worked for you for so long, and that's made perhaps expanding your repertoire a little harder. And in that, you are not alone. There are a lot of people out there who have done the same thing, who have this same quote-unquote problem. Now, in some cases, it's about carving a deep groove. And perhaps if you had varied your masturbatory habits in kindergarten and going forward, you would be able to respond to different kinds of sensation. It's also possible, and I think it's the case for some people, that this is what it takes. This is the only thing that works. Even if you had, at age 7, been a little bit more experimental about different sensations when you were masturbating at age 7, as some people do, it's possible you would still be reliant on this one technique because it is the thing that hits the button that gets you off. Okay, if it's either, if you've carved so deep a groove in yourself that carving a new groove is going to require a lot of effort and time and patience and really denial, because to carve that new groove in yourself means you don't do this. It means you stop masturbating in this way and you attempt other forms of stimulation and self-pleasure, and if they don't get you off, you don't pivot then in the end to what worked, because your body or some part of your reptile brain will just hold out for the sensation that it knows will work, and it can just wait you out. And I know I'm anthropomorphizing a whole bunch of weird things here, but still, that's what happens. Like, if you try with a vibrator for a little bit and then get frustrated and pivot to the wrist-on-wrist pressure, your body's just going to go, okay, give me what I want. But if you try the vibrator, you get close or you get aroused, and then you don't pivot, eventually a new groove will be carved from those nerve endings to the pleasure centers in your brain, perhaps, and you'll get off or not. I think if you give it a try for 6 months or a year, really, of that kind of disciplined self-denial, it could work. If it doesn't work in that time, I don't think it'll ever work, and you should stop trying to make it work. When you say that oral vibrators, that they're uncomfortable, I would want to know if you mean those sensations are uncomfortable physically, or do they create a kind of emotional discomfort, a kind of anticipatory frustration because you know it's not going to work. If you just embrace it, this is how your orgasms work, this is how your body works, could you enjoy oral? Could you enjoy vibrators as something that's cranking you up for what you're going to do in the end to get you there if you do need this particular sensation to climax? And if you can accept and embrace what works, maybe then you can then enjoy those other things that don't quote unquote work in the sense they don't get you all the way there, but work in the sense that they provide you with physical pleasure, that they're a kind of foreplay. And you can incorporate this into partnered sex. What you're doing is kind of a pressure technique. You're laying on your stomach, you're not grinding, but you're putting pressure on your vulva, on your clitoris, between the mattress, by bearing down, by pressing down against your wrists, against the mattress. You could recreate that exact same pressure sensation, that bearing down sensation, on your husband's forehead, on his knee, on his forearms, on his elbow, perhaps on his hard dick. But you're not going to be able to incorporate your husband into what works for you if you can't be honest with your husband about what works for you. And that means you got to let go of the shame. Whether you've carved a deep groove in yourself or this is what your body was always going to require for you to come, regardless, you need to let go of the shame. You need to show your husband how you masturbate, or tell him how you masturbate. A good tip for people who are embarrassed about their masturbatory routines, their O faces, the position they have to get into, is one way to incorporate your partner into what works for you slowly without feeling too scrutinized, just to make it impossible for your partner to scrutinize you. Put a blindfold on your husband and have him lay next to you in bed while you do this. Maybe you could even make out with him while you do this, and you don't have to worry about him seeing you in this position that you'd still feel a little residual discomfort about. And maybe with some encouragement and time and a dozen orgasms in his presence, even if he can't see what you're doing, then you can take the mask off or take the blindfold off the husband and let him see. And then instead of your wrists, you can use his face. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Calm, the number one app for meditation and sleep. Happy New Year, everyone. 2020 was pretty challenging. In fact, it was kind of a shit show, and we could all benefit from less stress and more sleep in our lives. It's so important to take care of ourselves and invest in our well-being during times of anxiety. That's why we're excited to partner with Calm, the app designed to help you ease stress and get the best sleep of your life. Calm has a whole library of programs designed for healthy sleep, like soundscapes, guided meditations, and over 100 sleep stories narrated by soothing voices like Stephen Fry's, Kelly Rowland's, and Laura Dern's. Over 85 million people around the world use Calm to take care of their minds and get better sleep. Get the Calm app and experience a transformation in the way you sleep. For listeners of this show, Calm is offering a special limited-time promotion of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/savage. That's 40% off, unlimited access to Calm's entire library, and new content is added every week. Get started today at calm.com/savage. That's calm.com/savage.
Hey, Dan, Nancy, and the tech savvy at-risk youth. I have been listening for about a decade, so I've heard you tell plenty of people that their biggest leverage with their families is their presence. So I am really hoping that you have some advice for when that strategy is being used against you. I am a 30-year-old white liberal female living in Texas, and this past summer I went to a Black Lives Matter protest, made several social media posts about Black Lives Matter and defunding the police. And that is when my sister stopped talking to me because her husband is a police officer. I swear I tried to be sensitive to that fact at the time over the summer, and I never said anything at all derogatory about police officers. I really just tried to explain defunding the police and equated it to my own job teaching, saying that education is defunded every single year, and that if teachers were not being held accountable for being inappropriate with students, then I would be out there in the front lines protesting with people. Whatever, I can deal with her not talking to me. My issue here is that she's also included her kids in this, and my oldest nephew is a senior in high school, and I have also not been able to get in touch with him since this summer. So they haven't blocked me from any phone numbers or social media. They're just not responding to anything I send. Last week, my nephew turned 18, and I texted him, I called him, I've sent him a birthday present, and heard absolutely nothing back, and that one hurts a lot. So I just feel like I don't know what to do anymore, because I hate not being able to communicate with them and be in their lives, especially during COVID. I don't want to be the creepy aunt that's just like trying over and over and sending messages saying I love you or whatever, checking in, and I'm not wanted. So do I keep trying? Do I just keep letting them know I love them no matter what their mom is saying at home? And try to remember that those kids also have to stay sane while living with my sister. Do I go to my sister? I feel like, I don't know, just being too stubborn or it's my ego, but I feel like I should not be the one going to her and like begging her to talk to me and to fix this when I don't think anything's broken except her way of thinking. I really need some advice on what to do. I feel like it's just too hard to keep trying to talk to them and not hear back.
I feel like I would be a hypocrite if I didn't acknowledge that I have told people to do to racist relatives, to do to Trump voting relatives who won't shut up about it, what your sister's done to you, to cut them out of your life, in the hopes, perhaps, that it would induce exactly the kind of psychic pain that you're experiencing right now, which might push them to reassess their racist shit or their homophobic shit or their transphobic shit or their Trump voting shit and weigh what it's costing them, the relationships with their family members, versus what it's gaining them. And there's actually a subreddit on Reddit of people whose relationships with their families have been destroyed because parents and cousins or aunts or siblings have been lost to the QAnon conspiracy theory. And all of these people have had to essentially cut these lunatic family members out of their lives. And in a few cases, you see the lunatic family members eventually, in a few rare cases, come around. They begin to see through the conspiracy, in part because of what it's cost them. And I have endorsed that practice. So here we are with the shoe on the other foot, politically, with a kind of right-wing relative cutting the liberal out and inducing this kind of psychic pain in the hopes of, I don't know what. Is your sister hoping that you'll come around, that you'll disavow your support for the Black Lives Matter movement? Or is your sister just going to cut you out of her life and the lives of her children permanently to punish you eternally for this ideological sin? I don't know what's going on in your sister's head. There's not a lot that you can do, though, except what you've done, as painful as it might be to continue to do what you've done, which is to reach out to them occasionally, let them know that you're thinking of them, that you still love them, and that when they're ready to reestablish this relationship with you, you're open to reestablishing that relationship, to reestablishing contact. And at least for now, while things are as heated as they are now, you probably won't get a response, and that will hurt each and every time. So you might want to limit the number of times you open yourself up to that particular kind of hurt. Text message on a birthday, sending a card, being the bigger person, letting them know. Do it rarely, and brace yourself at least for the next 12 months, 24 months, 36 months, not to hear from them, not to get a response. Perhaps from your sister because she is angry. Perhaps from your nieces and nephews because they've been ordered to not contact you by their sister. And if your sister is awful, and it sounds like she might be, your nieces and nephews, even if they don't respond now because they fear the wrath of mom, just knowing that you're out there and they can reach out to you if they ever need to. And with that kind of mom, the odds that they will need to are higher. Knowing that they can ups the chances that they will. With that kind of mom, your nieces and nephews might need somewhere to run away to at some point. And your having reached out on birthdays for now, even without them responding, lets them know that you are that person, that they can, when they want to, when they need to, get in touch with. And that you will be open to them and you will welcome them back into your life. This really sucks. And, you know, I do think there are certain problems with the expression defund the police. I'm from a cop family. Like the politicos are saying, if you have to back up and explain what your slogan means after you chant it, it's probably not the best slogan and you're going to alienate people. And what I've found has worked in some conversations that I've had with family members, when I've been asked to explain what the fuck people mean by defund the police, is that all of my life, since I was 5 years old, I have listened to cops in my family complaining about being sent out to be a couples counselor, to be a mental health crisis manager, to do all sorts of things that are not police work. And what defund the police, and perhaps we need a better slogan than that, meant was stop paying police to go out and do what social workers or community organizations or couples counselors should be doing. Maybe take some money away from the police to fund these other things, to take some of the burden off the police, some of the expectations that we've heaped on police. And that has helped. That has helped open some eyes with some people that I have spoken to about it, because of my own personal experience being from a cop family, listening to what I've had to listen to cops say. Perhaps you've already said all of that to your sister when you explained what it meant, what defund the police meant to you. So continue to reach out. Continue to send those birthday cards, perhaps those gifts, perhaps those text messages on significant days. Brace yourself for now that you're not going to get a response. And live in hope that one day, if not your sister, then at least your nieces and nephews will come around and reach back out to you.
This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Squarespace. Whether you need a landing page, a beautiful gallery, a professional blog, or an online store, it's all there for you at Squarespace. Creating your site with Squarespace is a simple, intuitive process. Do you run your own business? You can design a great-looking online store with Squarespace's award-winning templates, customizable settings, and more, all without a single plugin. From nationally recognized brands to your favorite local shops, Squarespace is trusted by hundreds of thousands of savvy shop owners around the world, including all the tools you need to track inventory, process orders, and send custom emails in one intuitive interface. Squarespace's e-commerce allows you to understand every aspect of your business. If you need a website for more artistic pursuits, Squarespace has beautiful, easy-to-use templates that you can drag and drop with the greatest of ease. And if you need help, they have 24/7 customer support. So chill. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/savage and use the offer code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan, a 33-year-old straight male from Canada. I ended like a 10-year relationship a while back and entering the dating world now. And it's actually going like really well. I'd heard like a lot of horror stories about online dating, but so far it's actually been like a huge ego boost, so that's been nice. The thing I'm wondering about is how to ethically go about dating multiple people at the same time. So like I'm not looking for sex, I'm looking for a long-term relationship, but how much information do I owe the women I'm seeing, and like how I go about things? Like it kind of feels like I've got like 6 or 7 women that I'm auditioning and I get to pick a winner. That feels gross, but that's kind of how it's shaping up. So I just don't want to be a dick to these people who I'm genuinely trying to make a connection with, but will inevitably not be going forward with eventually, you know, like for most of them. So is it even ethical to see them all at once?
What you're talking about doing here, this radical thing, is what has historically been referred to as dating. You say not looking for sex, you're looking for a relationship. You're looking for sex and a relationship. You're looking for a romantic relationship that comes with, hopefully, ideally, a good sexual connection, sexually compatible. Please prioritize sexual compatibility when you're looking for a long-term romantic partner, particularly if that relationship is going to be sexually exclusive. You're looking for a relationship. And it's people understand that someone that they are just beginning to see or seeing casually may be, at that moment, seeing other people. They probably don't want to be reminded of it, but there's a point in a relationship's arc where it becomes exclusive. And implicit in that becoming exclusive is the understanding that prior to that moment, when exclusivity was established, it was not exclusive. And there are people out there who argue that if you are seeing multiple people, that's something that you should have to disclose. And I wonder if those people have ever been in relationships. How would that play out? You're on a first date with somebody and they say, full disclosure, I have a date tomorrow night. I had a date last week and we are not exclusive. You don't need to say that. That's just understood. After you make a commitment, after you say your boyfriend and girlfriend or boyfriend and boyfriend or girlfriend and girlfriend, and you either default into the monogamous assumption or opt in, ideally, preferably opt in to exclusivity and monogamy, it's just understood that this person might be at that moment literally auditioning other potential partners. Maybe you'll get picked. Maybe you'll be the one that they cut everybody else loose for. Maybe not. Everybody knows that going in. So you don't have to say that. And not only don't you have to say that, saying that would make you seem like someone who has no emotional intelligence. It would make you seem like someone who doesn't understand how dating works. And one of the things you want in a partner, one of the things that makes you want to go exclusive with someone, is that they have good judgment, that they know generally how things work. And somebody telling you on your first date that they don't understand how dating works, yeah, they're telling you that they don't have good judgment, that they have a low emotional IQ, and you will be less inclined to want to see them, much less become exclusive with them if they make that kind of disclosure on the first date. So get comfortable with the idea that you are auditioning potential future exclusive romantic partners, because that is literally what you're doing, and you are not doing anything wrong. This episode is brought to you by Helix Sleep. I wish you could join me and Terry on our Helix mattress so you could experience how comfortable it is. Everybody's unique, and Helix knows that, so they have several different mattress models to choose from. They have soft, medium, and firm mattresses. Mattresses great for cooling you down if you sleep hot, and even a Helix Plus mattress for plus-size folks. I took the Helix quiz. Actually, Terry and I took it together, and we were matched with the Lux Midnight mattress because I wanted something that felt not too soft but not too firm either, and Terry and I both tend to move around a lot at night. So if you're looking for a mattress, you take the quiz, you order the mattress that you're matched to, and the mattress comes right to your door, shipped for free. You don't ever need to go to a mattress store again. And of course, I love this part. Helix mattresses are built with sex in mind. Helix knows that people don't just sleep on their mattresses. So their mattresses are as sturdy as you need them to be. Helix is awesome, but you don't need to take my word for it. Helix was awarded the number one best overall mattress pick of 2020 by GQ and Wired Magazine. Just go to helixsleep.com/savage to take their 2-minute sleep quiz, and they'll match you to a customized mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. They have a 10-year warranty, and you get to try it out for free for 100 nights risk-free. They'll even pick it up if you don't love it, but you know what? Take it from us. You are going to love your Helix mattress. Helix is offering right now up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners at helixsleep.com/savage. That's helixsleep.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm a bi woman, and like most of us, I've been in quarantine for what feels like 50 billion years. I haven't had sex during the pandemic, so I'm single, so I'm trying to not be out there dating. I'm trying to stay home. Before the pandemic started, I had a great friends with benefits situation, and that person introduced me to the joys of having my ass eaten, which was new to me, but I really enjoy it. So my question basically is, do you have any recommendations for how I can have that same kind of experience or a similar one at home by myself until it's safe to go out and hook up with other people again? The only thing that's kind of come close in this time has been I got a bidet, not for this purpose, but it just turned out that it can be kind of enjoyable when done just right. But I don't know if that's a thing or if that's like weird or risky. But basically, I'm just wondering if you have any other suggestions, because I really am only into like the rimming kind of aspect when I have a partner, not really putting anything in there. So butt plug doesn't really do anything for me and is not enjoyable. Same for a dildo or anything else like that. So would love to know if you have any suggestions for me.
I might have just the sex toy that you're looking for, but it kind of depends on what type of rimming we're talking about here. Are we talking about just somebody gently licking your butthole, or are we talking about somebody who seems to be trying to take your tonsils out with their tongue? through your ass. If it's the gentle licking you miss, and I suspect it might be because you say you're not really into penetration, and the way some people rim, it can feel a little bit like you're being penetrated by their tongue. There is a line of sex toys called the Squeel, S-Q-W-E-E-L. I call them the Pocket Altar Boy. It's basically this rotating wheel of little tiny pink tongues that simulates a sensation on the clit. They're mostly designed for the clit, of rapid fire licking. And if you lube these little tonguelet things up, it can really, according to the people I know who have clits who've experimented with the Squeal, it can really feel like an expert clit licker is going to town on your clit. There is no reason, there is nothing stopping you from getting yourself a Pocket Altar, excuse me, a Squeal, and using it instead of on your clit, on your butt. Of course, if you use it on your butt, you need to thoroughly clean it before you use it anywhere near your clit or your labia. So if you get one that you want to use in your butt, you might want to make that just a butt toy, because although I'm sure they can be clean, there's a lot of nooks and crannies and tongues and ridges on a Squeal. And you might want to err on the side of butt only if you're going to use your Squeal, your Pocket Altar Boy, as a butt toy.
Hi, Dan, 29-year-old queer woman calling from a big city on the East Coast. I've been sleeping with a very sweet trans guy for about 3 months now, and the chemistry is fantastic. The sex is super affirming for both of us. We're having a great time. But there is one problem. He's very against the idea of having lesbian sex, and I think he equates dildos to lesbian sex, which, number one, bothers me because everyone uses dildos, doesn't matter if you're a lesbian or not. And he only wants to use his pack and play packer for PIV and for getting his dick sucked, which I'm more than happy to do, but it's just not working for me for PIV. It's not long enough. It's not very soft. It kind of like moves around. It's not really working for me. And I don't know how to say this to him without really hurting his feelings. I was like riding him on the couch one time, and it just like, it wouldn't stay in. And I was like, it's too short for this position. And he got pretty flustered and was like, this has never been a problem before. And I could tell it really hurt his feelings. He doesn't want to talk about his packer. He tucks it away pretty quickly after I suck him off. And I don't know. I don't know how to navigate this. Like, I know the sex would be so much better and a lot more fun for both of us if we weren't struggling with the packer the whole time. I don't know. Any advice?
You've been seeing this guy for 3 months, and it doesn't sound like you enjoy the sex. This guy has kind of put you in a position where you advocating for yourself sexually, you expressing to him what it is you need and how you would like it, is to risk traumatizing him or triggering him. He's ruled this kind of discussion out of bounds because he associates, for some reason, a strap-on dildo with lesbian sex. So I guess if you don't want to go there because he ruled there out of bounds, you're just going to have to break up with him or continue to have sex for the rest of your life that you find frustrating and unsatisfactory. I think you should go there. I think you should risk it. I think you can make an argument that there's nothing necessarily lesbian about a strap-on dildo, or anything more lesbian about strapping on a dildo that's hard in the way you need it to be hard for you to enjoy penetrative sex than there is strapping on a packer that doesn't really work for you. Now, he may be very invested in, he may feel that his packer is an expression, is a part of his body, and is imbued with his ideas and or his sense, or is deeply symbolic of his masculinity. If he can make that leap for a packer, he might be able to make that leap for a dildo, for one dildo that is the hard version of that packer. But he's not going to make that leap if you don't force the issue, at the risk of hurting his feelings, at the risk of him ending the relationship. You've expressed some dissatisfaction, and he did a kind of typically male thing and said a very typically male thing. He said he has not had this problem with anyone else before, and he shifted the blame or the responsibility or the failure onto your shoulders. How many times have we heard men do that to women? You know, I've never had this problem with anybody before, about her not being able to climax from PIV alone, or him losing his erection during sex, a cis guy losing his erection during sex. I've never had this problem with anybody before. It's a very male thing to say. And when men say this thing, we who give sex advice typically advise women to push back against it, to not allow him, if it's not your fault, to make it your fault. If the sex isn't working, or the sex doesn't work, and there's no way to address it or talk about it, if you can't give any feedback, they can't hear any criticism, if they can't listen to you calmly explain what your needs are and figure out a way together that those needs can be met, there's no hope for this relationship. So I would urge you to have this conversation, to tell him what it is you need, and to encourage him to perhaps think differently about what a strap-on dildo is. It's not necessarily about lesbian sex. And who cares if it was mostly about lesbian sex or mostly used by lesbians? Straight women strap on dildos and fuck their male partners. I saw some gay porn recently that a friend made where he strapped on, even though he's a cis guy with a dick, he strapped on a dildo and fucked somebody else with a much bigger dick than his dick because he wanted to have a giant dick for that guy. Lots of different types of people strap on dildos for lots of different types of reasons. He should be able to wrap his head around that. And maybe potentially losing you will be the incentive that he needs to start wrapping his head around that.
Hey, Dan. So 2 years ago, via online dating, I met a man who is 17 years older than me. I'm currently 27. And at the time when we met, admittedly, I was really just looking for attention and just to be, you know, consensually used and kind of just have someone to dote on me just for a microsecond. So the first time I went over to his place, that was my intention, to have a, you know, one and done hookup, never talk again, and just go from there. And mostly this was because of our age difference. I was 25 at the time, and I just couldn't even fathom having any type of future with him. And well, so we did fuck that night and the next day. It was really great sex. But to my surprise, we also got along really well, like remarkably well. I don't think I've ever clicked with a man that quickly. And we actually both commented on it in that first meeting because it just almost felt serendipitous. All that said, the next day, I was still determined not to pursue anything. I could not wrap my mind around a future still, given that I just shut it down from the get-go. And that was, in fact, 2 years ago, the last time we had ever fucked, first and last time. But fast forward to today, and he's still one of my closest friends. We see each other regularly. Less now because of COVID, but we still talk, you know, weekly. And, you know, in the first few months after we initially met, he definitely made it known that he was interested in more. And I repeatedly rejected him, but we were able to build a really solid friendship with a mildly flirty streak woven throughout. But he really is just one of my dearest friends. By now, it might be pretty obvious where this call's going, but lately, I can't stop wondering if he and I are actually meant to be together. I was in a relationship earlier this year, and that's actually when I started thinking about it with my friend, just comparing how he would be a better partner than my boyfriend at the time was. And I'm just at a point where I really think that my friend and I could be something great. So Dan, I know your advice on romantically propositioning friends to give them a way out ahead of time and welcome the no, but do you have any advice in the meantime for how to shift the energy back to him seeing me as sexually desirable, like he first did, and not just his platonic friend of the past couple years? I know I'm going to have to be the one to initiate the conversation. I can't just drop subtle hints because of the amount of times I've turned him down, but I'm still worried that this will just catch him off guard and he won't even be able to picture me in that way anymore. I guess I'm just wondering if there's some pre-work I can do to maybe start shifting perceptions a bit.
You ask if there's a way to gently shift perceptions, when what you need to do is just go ahead and drop that bomb. 2 years ago when you met this guy, he was interested in you romantically, and you were interested in him too. And you let a number, you let an age gap convince you that it couldn't possibly work out, so you had to smother it in its crib. And now you realize that that was a mistake. He let you know a couple of years ago that he was interested in more. He was interested in you romantically, would like to continue to see you. And so the ball's in your court. It's been in your court for a long time, for 24 months. Go ahead and lob it the fuck back. He may have moved on. He may not see you as a potential romantic partner anymore. Or he could, I'm mixing metaphors like crazy here. He could be carrying a torch and carrying it, but obscuring it so as not to make you feel bad. So as to be the friend that you wanted him to be, that you allowed him to be, to play that role in your life so he could have some role in your life. He could still want more. There's only one way to find out if he still wants more, is open to more, and that's to ask him. And it'll blow his mind. And there's just no way to be gentle about that. There's no way to subtly behave toward him in a different way. Because any signal you send that's subtle, where you're just trying to gently shift his perceptions, even if he perceives it, he's going to say, no, no, I'm misreading her. No, no, like I always say, he's probably been controlling for the last 2 years for dickful thinking and not trying to read into any of your behaviors a signal about interest in him in that way that you told him you weren't interested in him so as not to fuck up the friendship that you two have. So if you made any like little subtle shift, if you flipped your hair or, you know, wore something more revealing in front of him than you typically do, or asked him out to dinner, you know, a kind of a restaurant that you typically don't go to with him or with friends, he wouldn't go, oh my God, this means she's in to me now in a way that she wasn't or didn't allow herself to be before. No, he's going to sit there and say to himself, don't go for it. She's not interested in you this way. She's only flipping her hair. We're only eating in this restaurant for some random reason that I'm not clear of, but I'm not going to allow my dick to self-servingly interpret this signal as a signal of interest and potentially ruin this friendship by making a move. You have to make the move. You have to not flip your hair, not gently shift perceptions. You have to drop the bomb. Tell him that 2 years ago, when you refused to date him, you were wrong, and you realize that now. Luckily, the age gap has gotten no bigger in the last 2 years. So, go for it. Tell him how you feel. Tell him how you feel now. Tell him how wrong you were 2 years ago to reject him, and ask him if he might be interested in picking things up where you stupidly left things off. Before we get to listener tweets and response calls, we got so many responses from women with their suggestions for how to deal with recurrent UTIs, urinary tract infections, including using unlubricated condoms, switching condoms, not using condoms, using lube with Careen, using water-based lube, taking a candida cleanse, quitting alcohol, giving up chocolate, not eating any kind of citrus, taking more vitamin C, giving up alcohol and or coffee, taking Hiprex, getting tested for STIs, avoiding the missionary position, drinking lots of water, not shaving your pubes, getting an ozone bladder installation, and most popular by far, taking D-mannose, an herbal supplement. So obviously, this is an extremely common ailment, and people have lots of different ideas and recommendations, too many for us to play them all, or even really a representative sample of them all in one response roundup. But clearly, a lot of our listeners are suffering and need help or have suffered and want to help others. We want to help too. So we will be bringing on an expert very soon to talk about UTIs at length, and we will go over all of the various remedies out there. All right, let's read some tweets. At GTats tweets, I recently learned about the Savage Lovecast through a match on a dating app. Even if it doesn't go anywhere, I'm happy to have gained a wonderful and important pod. We are just as happy to have you as a new listener, GTATS, and please pass my thanks on to your dating app match. At iNias tweets, if someone is shitty to waiters, they'll eventually be shitty to lovers. Wise words at Fake Dan Savage. Anias Nee is quoting me in their tweet, so I'm quoting someone who's quoting me, but it's an important point that I want to emphasize. Someone who treats waiters like shit, and bartenders, and hotel maids, and Uber drivers, and pizza delivery guys, and hairdressers, that person will eventually treat you like shit too. It's a lesson I learned the hard way and had to learn more than once. And finally, at Lie Tig tweets, solo New Year's Eve party this year, but that's okay. I got a snuggly pup, some bubbly, and a plan to play games online, and a couple of episodes of the Savage Lovecast to catch up on. Fuck you, 2020. I will have a good time alone just to spite you. We're happy we could be part of your solo New Year's Eve celebrations, Lie Tig. Thank you for doing the right thing, staying home and keeping yourself and others safe. And a very happy new year to you and your cute pup too. And a big thank you to everyone who posted about the show on their social media accounts over the last week. We really do appreciate it. But remember, if you want me to read your tweet on next week's episode, you got to use the Savage Lovecast hashtag. And now your response calls.
Hi, Dan. This reply is for the woman in episode 740 who gets hassled by people about why she doesn't have children. I'm 55 and child-free by choice. Whenever people get too nosy about why I don't have children, I look them straight in the eye and say, you know, having kids isn't for everyone, but you aren't allowed to admit that after you've had them. I'm so glad not to find myself in that situation. That generally ends the annoying questions really quick.
Hi, Dan. I was just calling with some feedback for your caller who had called in on episode 740 and was concerned about her friend who is experiencing domestic violence and his partner had attempted to strangle him. Strangulation increases the likelihood that a person's partner will kill them by a factor of 10. It is next to owning a firearm, one of the biggest predictors of domestic abuse leading to murder. And I just wanted to encourage her to find some resources for him, help him possibly get away before this situation gets even more tragic than it is. And I know it's hard, but there are resources out there, and just someone who's strangling a person there's just no good that can come from that. And I just hope everybody can be safe and get help.
This is for the caller in episode 740 that was wondering whether her boyfriend, who's sweet, if his alcoholism was a price of admission. Babe, I have been there. I just, during quarantine, got out of a 6-year relationship with someone I love very deeply, but who is an alcoholic like that. And I felt exactly what you were feeling. And I have to tell you, there were so many nights when I sat thinking about, you know, could I do this to fix him? Could I do that to fix him? And then in the back of my mind, I kept thinking, man, if I could only snap my fingers and be out of here and be settled in my new life, I would do it. Well, babe, I got to tell you, it's about 6 months later and I'm there. I'm where I wanted to be. I left him. It was awful and sad and weird and complicated. And there was a couple hairy months. But here I am in my apartment that I have all by myself, not worrying about anyone else, and I'm free. So if you need a sign that things are going to get better, here I am. And if you need a sign that you deserve better, here it is. And if you want a glimpse of what your future is, it's sitting in your apartment by yourself on a Tuesday night, absolutely and incandescently free. Go after it.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for me or a comment about this week's show? There are two ways to get them to us. You can call us at 206-302-2064, or you can use the voice memo app on your phone to record your question or comment and email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. The deadline for submissions to my Dirty Little Film Festival Hump is this Friday, January 8th. Go to humpfilmfest.com/submit to find out how to make a film. Some of the best films we've received over the years have been made at the last minute. And while there's a maximum length for Hump films, 5 minutes max, there's no minimum length. We've featured films in Hump that were 30 seconds long. So if you've got a camera, and you do, and there's something or someone you're passionate about, it's not too late to make a short film for Hump. And make sure you grab your tickets for Hump 2021, an all-new collection of films, some of which are being made right now as we speak. This year, there are a variety of viewing parties to join, including one with Hump filmmakers, an all-nude viewing party, and one with me on opening night. There are lots of different showtimes, including a European and Australian screening, so go to humpfilmfest.com to find a showtime that works for you. Follow me on Twitter @FakeDanSavage. Follow Joellen Naughty on Twitter @JoellenNaughty, which is spelled N-O-T-T-E. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian, and me and the Tech Savvy At-Risk Youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week for an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.